Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The year is 1980. Sydney's streets are filthy, running rampant with crime and corruption. Puberty Blues is onto the cinemas, Ice House is blaring on the stereo, it's humid and dangerous, and a young man has decided to join the police force to fight crime. That man, of course, is my dad. Loose Units, the podcast, was created to tell the cases that wouldn't fit into my first book, Loose Units. But Loose Units was a series of fantastical tales that I wrote based on the real crimes my dad solved on the force back in the early 80s. So this season, Dad and I are finally going to go back to the year 1980. And each week, we'll be going chapter by chapter through Loose Units, the book. And Dad will tell us the story behind my version of events. It'll be thrilling, revelatory, and as always, very, very loose. Welcome to Loose Units Origins.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units Origins, the frankly thrilling podcast where I take my ex-cop dad through my book about him chapter by chapter, and he tells me, you know, the real story behind the story. Dad, how are you feeling today?
I'm good, mate. You know how you said frankly thrilling?
Yeah.
There used to be a very famous Australian actor called Frank Thring.
I don't know what to do with that information.
In the 1960s. Anyway.
Yeah, cool.
Yep.
Got that out of your system? That was a Frank Thring episode.
Anyway, it's a bit of historic movie trivia.
It works. Yeah, it's all good stuff. Anyway, last week when we left a 21-year-old John Verhoeven, he was hurtling through the air in the middle of a car chase. And you, Dad, this was a chapter about your time stuck in the back seat on your first night with Len Beater, your buddy.
Yeah. Yep.
So what I was going to do is read the first paragraph of this chapter just to kind of see what happens to the car, and then let's talk about car chases, okay?
Mm. Now, Paul, before we start, can I just throw a minor sort of like a clue into the mix?
Oh, sure.
For you and all the listeners. Mm-hmm. Christine and I are devotees of the show, is it called Sherlock?
Elementary.
Isn't that funny? I'm painting myself on one hand as a devotee.
And then you can't remember the name.
And then I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
Of Sherlock. We watched an episode last night. Mm-hmm. And in that episode, they use my buddy's real name. Can you believe it?
Are you fucking serious?
I'm deadly serious. I'm sitting there last night watching it now. You'll have to tease out of me down the track. It's not really for today, but for perhaps a Friday.
Well, because Elementary is one of my favourite shows.
Mm. And if what an incredible buried treasure hunt to dig up the name. They actually used his real name. I sat there.
In what context?
Oh, he's... we'll just leave it for another time.
That is so interesting because one of the key figures in Elementary, at least early on, is the Australian director John Paulson. He's the founder of the Tropfest Film Festival. And, you know, he's Australian and he's from Sydney, so it's entirely possible that maybe he heard a name. Maybe
wouldn't that
he
be weird?
Did some research. Mm. You know? God, that's really interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Okay, you can tell me off mic, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, that's really cool. I feel like I've just drawn Loose Units one step closer to the world of Sherlock Holmes, which is always exciting. Now, Dad, chapter 6 is this week's chapter for everyone reading along at home. And chapter 6 is called The Park. With a sickening crunch, the white van landed and began to roll slowly down towards the trees. Dunn took a moment to recover, shaking the dust from his eyes. And as the three of them watched, all still winded from the sudden evasive driving Dunn had managed to pull off, they saw the doors of the van fly open almost in unison, and three occupants jump out of the still-moving and barely intact vehicle. They then proceeded to run. Now, I don't want to give away what happens next in the chapter, so let's just for now talk about what it's like to be in a car chase. And I mean, one of the things that was really enjoyable about riding Loose Units, that was riding a shitload of car chases. And there's not really any car chases in Electric Blue because, let's face it, the person you're heading to see is dead. So there's usually less of a rush. Do you have any advice for people who might want to participate in a car chase? You know, some driving tips.
As the chasee or the chaser?
Oh, good one. Okay, so well, I'm assuming you've never been chased.
Not that I'd admit to.
Not STE, certainly. But let's say you were being chased by somebody in a car chase. What advice would you give them to throw off their pursuers?
Well, if they're the police and it's the highway patrol, generally speaking, I'd pull over. Always. Because the problem, of course, with a high-speed chase is that, particularly with a lot more traffic on the roads, depending on what time of the day or night it is, I mean, if there's no one on the road at 3 a.m., I mean, if it's 3 in the morning, but the problem with being chased by the police is that, all right, I mean, like I said, if you've just done a major armed robbery or committed some heinous offence or you've done a ram raid on a bank in the city, you're going to have high-speed getaway cars. You're going to have multiple cars. You're going to be changing cars, changing disguises, depending on how deep you want to go. Bearing in mind the point of this podcast is not to give you the bad people
advice
on how to commit, you know. But look, there's a lot of surveillance material, a lot of cameras.
It's got to be much harder now to escape, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, once adrenaline kicks in, and if you're a good driver, like in some of these movies where they use ex-racing car drivers or current racing car drivers that really know how to drive. And then you've got to look, if it's general duties police, you don't know who's behind the wheel. It could be a really experienced police officer, but it could be someone that's just come out of the academy that has had a year's driving experience, full stop. And then you've got to introduce rein, etc. But if it's a pursuit car that are modified,
yeah.
Having said that, there aren't a lot of highway patrol officers on at 3 in the morning. But my advice to people is, don't get in a situation, obviously, where you're going to want to evade. But there are a lot of bike riders do it, motorbike riders.
Hang on, because drive away from police.
Yeah. I mean, I know people.
You would have much better maneuverability than a police car if you're on a bike, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they can really do, you know, particularly in high traffic. They can get between the cars, and it's. I think most police these days don't chase motorbikes. But there's an argument. But again, it's a whole series. It's the whole ethical dilemma about do you or don't you chase. And a lot of the public go, why would you chase? But if we were to do a whole episode, which I think we should one day, a Friday ep, talking about the pros and cons of chases. But on this particular night, I'd been in the job, as you know, God, less than a week.
Yeah.
I mean, the adrenaline was coursing through my veins.
And let's pop you in. You're in the back of the car.
Yeah, I'm in the back. I'd moved into the middle.
Yes, that's right.
And I disengaged my
seatbelt.
My seatbelt, and I was holding on to the headrests, and I was basically, well, look, it was real. There was a sense of surrealism about the unfolding event, and I didn't know how it was going to unfold. I didn't know what the end game was. I just knew that there was a vehicle that had been wanted for numerous offences, more than 20 offences in the preceding shift, and all of a sudden, a situation. I mean, I can't believe, if you think about it, and it's just struck me just then for the first time, is why on earth the panel van decided to come up alongside the police car. I mean, if I was the driver of that van, and I already had 20 to 30 brake and enters, etc., under my belt for the preceding several hours, why would you come up alongside a police car? To me, that demonstrates... you could say that you know, they were being uber cool and assumed perhaps that the police were unaware of that vehicle.
Yeah.
But I would have hung back.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do a U-turn in the middle of the Harbour Bridge, although I did one night, but I was off duty. That's a whole other story. And it was pretty irresponsible.
There is a scene in The Empire Strikes Back where the Millennium Falcon is outnumbered, and what they do is they attach themselves to the bottom of a Star Destroyer, I believe, because no one's going to look at the bottom of a Star Destroyer. The problem with that is, of course, that metaphor only works if the van was 1/100th the size of a police car, but what's actually happened is it possible that they were just tired and they pulled out and then realized they had to kind of try and play it cool now that they were next to a police car?
I think it was so funny. In your book, you talk about the guy, there were three in the front seat, was a bench seat. And the guy closest to me, how he couldn't resist as it drew up alongside, just very casually, nonchalantly, just sort of turning his head at 90 degrees and looking at me. And we both kind of looked at each other. It would have been a great scene in any type of film, but it would have been great in a black and white silent film, because the looks on our faces were one of just sheer... I mean, it was very, very weird. And then, of course, the driver planted it, put the foot down, and then it was on. You know, we called the chase. I say we. That was the Observer, my buddy. So he's... And the radios back then were Motorola radios. Like in the, if you watch any decent cop film, particularly American from the 70s, they all had Motorolas.
Yeah.
You know, they were kind of, they had like a coiled wire that was sort of spring loaded. And, you know, you could reef it out so far and you just called the chase. And the faster you're going, the more rapidly the streets are coming up. And my problem was that I didn't know the area at all, and nor would I have been expected to after I'd only been at North Sydney a week. So to be working in a high-stress situation in the back of a police car, and the driver, he was a very good driver, as the readers will know that have read your first book, he was a police officer in Scotland, and he was a damn good driver. And he pushed the driver of the panel van, he pushed him hard. At times, we were within inches of the back of the panel van. And we were losing the brakes. It doesn't take long, or didn't take long back then, to lose the brakes. They would overheat. And when brakes overheat, you basically have no brakes. So how do you
slow down? Do you handbrake turn? Or
you can do that, but the main thing is to use the column shift and knock it down into second gear and just sort of try and manually. It's a lot easier in a manual car, but we didn't have manual police cars back then. And we were just heading into oblivion, and we were also dangerously heading out of our area.
Hang on, you didn't have manual police cars?
No, all autos.
I think I wrote these cars as manuals.
Well, that's very sweet, Paul, but there's just no room for gear sticks, so there's so much other shit.
Dad, I think I wrote everyone driving stick, because I think in... Yeah, I do. Literally, I mentioned gear shifting. God damn it.
That's okay. But... No. I mean, in the very early days, in the 60s, when they used the Mini Cooper S, the Highway Patrol used those. They were manual.
Okay.
And they went like the, they were fast. So we came into this park and that's basically where this chapter 6 starts, isn't it?
Well, weirdly, the car crash and the car chase aren't the most interesting and aren't the most stressful parts of this chapter. The most stressful part kicks off because of this next passage, which I'm going to read. Okay. John barely had time to process any of this. He knew that the end goal of any car chase was to force your adversary, for lack of a better word, into a state of recklessness which would get them to crash. Len had done that with aplomb, but John had never been in a car chase and had a thick diagonal welt across his torso from where the seatbelt had struck him. And before he could ask Len what to do next, Len did the unthinkable. Dunn had already burst from the car and had begun chasing one of the men down a side street. Upon seeing this, Len began muttering angrily, swiftly drew his gun, elbowed open his door, and bolted after the men. So, at this point, you have three suspects scattering from the van, and Len just sort of fucked off. And then something happens, which is kind of insane, and that is that shots fired. You hear... Now, you told me that he was... what happened there? Because I don't think I've ever heard exactly what you think happened from Len's perspective.
Well, Len, he was not the most... he didn't possess great physical prowess, I don't know whether he'd ever run in his life, but he was confronted. And he always wore a massive, ill-fitting, oversized suit, kind of pants, that had no form. In other words, they just followed the lines of the contours of his body, which was formless. And he didn't have much of a neck. And on a good day, he looked like Norman Gunston hair-wise. On a bad day, and this was a bad day because it was pissing down. So bear in mind, three of us in a police car have just caused a major accident. Now, the accident to me looked so bad that I just couldn't believe anyone could even escape the vehicle. I thought they'd all be at least unconscious if they were lucky. Because they, you didn't mention in the story, Paul, but they sideswiped quite a few parked cars. And in the commotion, all these people that are living in this beautiful suburb of Waverton are awoken at some ungodly hour to multiple crashes, sirens, and those blue lights, the police lights, ambulance lights. You know, if you're asleep at night and any of those emergency service vehicles are nearby.
Oh, you wake up, yeah.
You wake up, the glowing comes in and bounces off your ceiling. You are aware, and it's instinctive for people to go to the window and look out, and obviously something major was happening. There's a white panel van, both doors open, three occupants decamped, all in different directions. One to the right, two got out of the passenger door, but one ran straight ahead into just along the road.
Yeah.
And the passenger, he ran down into this park. And I still to this day go back to that park occasionally, maybe once a year. And I actually look in awe at that park because it brings back so many vivid memories. So let's call the passenger offender number three. He's closest to the passenger window.
Yeah.
He bolts down into the darkness. Now, it's really dark. It's pitch black, actually, and there's no lighting in the park, and it's pissing down as well. And my colleague, my buddy, runs after, and I'm just thinking, it looked silly and dangerous to me because it's not cool for one police officer to follow an offender. You don't know whether they're armed, and to just follow this guy into the bush, into a dark park.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And then my buddy, and I'm sort of standing up there. All the offenders have gone. People are coming out of their houses. I could hear sirens from miles away. And then one of the most chilling sounds that anyone can hear is I heard two shots fired from the park. And
which is, just to be clear, that's where Len went. So
Len
was
down in the bush.
And,
yeah. Dunn was off doing something else. And I heard these two shots and I realized the incredible importance and significance and urgency of a situation. I had never used a police radio in anger, and I thank God I'd been trained, and I realized that I had to let someone know. So I ran back to the police car. I waited. I stood there frozen in time, looking down into the abyss with the rain coming down, wanting, longing, wishing for my buddy to come out. But then, of course, the thought also struck me that he may well have been shot. Should I run down into the bush, into the blackness? What happens if I run down and get shot? What a fuck up. And you just, everything about that night was just, talk about baptism by fire. I reached in and it's pissing down. You're not standing there with umbrellas. You are wet through to the skin. And I grabbed the police radio. And I used the call sign, which was, I think we were 6-2. And I just said, now what you're supposed to say, 6-2, then you say urgent. And then that notifies VKG to then say all cars, remain off air, basically. 6-2 only. In other words, 6-2, you've got the entire spectrum of bandwidth. And if a police officer says urgent, it's there are only a few things that it can be. And I uttered the words that all police dread the most, I imagine. And that was shots fired. Now, I didn't really know where I was. I knew I was in a park in Waverton. In fact, I don't even know whether I knew I was in Waverton. I don't think I even knew the suburb. This is an area of Sydney I had never been into until I joined the police force. I mean, Waverton's a very beautiful, sleepy, lovely, lower North Shore harbour sort of suburb.
Yeah.
Very affluent and very sedate. And, the police knew because the Observer was calling the streets in rapid succession because VKG needs to get a sense of where you are. And remember, listeners, the maps that VKG are using are just a blown-up version of a street directory in front of them.
Which you've got in the car.
Yeah, but that's no one's reading maps in a high-speed chase. You're just calling the streets and hope that VKG are getting a handle, because what VKG need to do, because you're on a certain radio frequency, but Paul, as you and the listeners know, once you start heading towards another area, and we were heading towards Lane Cove, Chatswood, 25 Divisions area, they have to open up 25 Divisions radio and they amalgamate the areas so that more and more police can listen in, particularly if it's a very fluid event. And then when you start talking shots fired, the hairs on the back of every police officer that heard those words, I mean, that just gives you a mega dose of adrenaline.
Of course.
And it's very important for the adrenaline to kick in, particularly at that time of the morning when people are generally, your circadian or circadian rhythms are all over the shop. But this injection of adrenaline into your body enables you to just gear up, prepare yourself for the unknown, because all the police that are coming in and had been coming in for some time, sort of homing in on, you know, this sort of central event unfolding. And as they're making their way from all over the, you know, they'd probably amalgamated because we were very close to the harbour, so they would have had city areas also amalgamated on the channel. And I just realised that what I'd said was momentous, and that escalated the event, and all sorts of other things begin to happen behind the scenes. You can imagine VKG then anticipating, because they're not they don't want to react to a situation. They don't want to find out later on that a police officer has been shot. So they need to sort of already start to bring up all these other, they have contingency plans. And it was all based on what I would imagine would have been a worst case scenario. And, you know, I was way, way out of my league that night.
And you obviously did, I mean, you did arrest someone that night. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah.
I know that, first of all, just quickly, I know the version of the arrest that happened in real life is quite different to the one that happens in the book. And I've had this discussion with you before. And one of the things I like about Loose Units is that I get to create a version of you that is the superhero version of you. In the book, you run at a guy and basically kick him off a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Now, that didn't happen in real life. Could you tell me about the actual arrest?
Yeah, but it didn't happen, but there was a motorbike involved.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you described him wearing a particular T-shirt, which I thought was really nice and sweet, but...
Of Countdown shirt.
You know, this was one of the guys, one of the offenders, and what he'd done, and you've got to... Look, perhaps I should just mention firstly, Paul, that my colleague, my buddy, did come out of the bush. And came toward me. Do you want me to sort of round that bit of the conversation up or go on to the offender?
Oh, good question. Okay, let's close because, off.
Because, yep. You know, my buddy came out of the bushes and he must have seen this terrified look in my face, and he knew what he'd done, and he knew what he'd done was a bad thing, okay? He pulled his gun and shot into the air and delivered two warning shots. Police know that you don't just fire willy-nilly into the air.
It's not the one reason,
bullets come down somewhere.
Yeah.
But you just don't fire warning shots. When you pull your gun out, you shoot to kill. And you don't shoot someone in the back that's running away from you, which is what this guy is doing. And also, they've done some break and enters. That is not an offence that warrants the death penalty, i.e. being shot dead.
Yeah.
So... my buddy came out of the bush. He looked like a drowned rat. He stood there. He's still clenching his firearm. And we had a conversation, and all his dread and worst nightmares came to fruition when he looked at me and he said, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said, "Please tell me you didn't put anything over the... Please tell me you didn't say anything about shots fired." And to which I said, "Well, yes, I did. And, you know, I called shots fired." He just thought, he knew that he'd basically fucked up really badly, because I didn't know. What happens if the offender had fired two shots into my buddy? That's shots fired.
Yeah.
That would have warranted me saying that.
Course.
I was not aware of what was going down in the bushes. Anyway, the problem was also that, you know, and you write about it eloquently about the bullets that we used to use. You don't just lose bullets. So he had the problem of, you know, the paperwork and the questions that he would had to have gone through, probably at internal affairs, would have been incredibly daunting, which I was not a party to. But what happened was, one of the offenders who got away, let's be clear, he escaped. We didn't know who he was. Well, I knew what he looked like, but you don't expect ever for someone that commits a crime. What he did, incredibly, he stole a motorbike that night. It was a little Honda shitbox. He came back to the scene. And by then there were at least 100 members of the public and numerous emergency services.
Interesting.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And he comes back on this bike. It was a 125 Honda. It was like a postman's bike. And I could see him. And he was sort of peering through the crowd. And I thought, this is not real. And I started to walk toward him, and he tried to kickstart his little bike. But it was wet, and it was he'd hot-wired it. But he only came back to just check out the scene, which, as we know, a lot of arsonists do. And I made a beeline for him. And yes, I did arrest him in a very thrilling and, you know, exciting way. And you described me as doing a sort of a 10-foot lunge through the air, yeah, like Bruce Lee. It wasn't quite like that, but I did manage to get him on the ground. Now, what had happened was I had never used my handcuffs before.
That's right.
They were a new type of handcuff, but they've got a locking mechanism on them, and we were taught at the academy this fancy way of holding the cuffs, both of them in one hand, and then just sort of smashing them down on the wrist, and they would automatically, in a microsecond, sort of wrap round, and Bob's your uncle. They were cuffed, but I'd forgotten to unlock them. So I went to sort of thrust my metal handcuffs down on his wrists, the only thing I did was basically bash his wrist.
Yeah.
And there were members of the public just all standing, looking, and I was embarrassed. But eventually I did get the gist and got him handcuffed and got him into the back of the paddy wagon, 6-1. Yeah, that was an amazing night, Paul.
Well, you know, it's one of the most action-packed stories in the book, and I find it so interesting that your first shift with Len was so eventful, and I know it all goes profoundly south from there, but that's kind of a matter for the next chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, chapter 6 has a bunch of other stuff that happens. I mean, obviously, basically it ends with you kind of getting the handcuffs on and getting the suspect kind of booked, and then the next chapter, chapter 7, which is called Off the Cuff, deals with, you know, you kind of checking that prisoner in and a whole bunch of other stuff. So next week, we'll deal with chapter 7, Off the Cuff. That was a great episode, Dad. Thank you so much for sharing that stuff.
Paul, an absolute pleasure. I'm loving it.
Also, everyone, a very, very special guest will be appearing on Loose Units over the coming weeks as a very special pre-Christmas treat. And there is a very, very big announcement coming for something that Dad and myself and Tegan and a whole bunch of other people have got planned for your Christmas. So stay tuned. There's loads of incredible stuff coming up. Stay safe. And we will see you very soon for another episode of Loose Units Origins. Bye.
Cheerio.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.